We're all adapting to new working models, to people being away from the office or not back in the office at all yet, to obviously digital platforms like this one, now established as a main tool of communication. I think they are fantastic tools, fantastic opportunities as well for employees. And at the same time, as leaders, we need to keep productivity high and retain a high level of team engagement. And that's really quite challenging in this current environment. So if you are a leader, or new to leadership and joined us today, this session should provide you with coaching techniques to remain effective and successful as we're transitioning into new work practices. This actually is an active session where we will be asking you live questions. So if you have a phone, if you are allowed to have a personal or a corporate phone if you're in the office able for you, please can you have it ready, because we will show you a QR code in a moment. But if you cannot and can use a browser, it's on menti.com, and that's all in the chat that you can see on the right-hand side. A last bit of housekeeping, sorry, we're going to mute yourselves because we just don't really want the background noise. But if you wish to voice a question, by all means, do let us know. The chat facility is live and open for you. If you wish to ask any questions, by all means, do. It is your session. So if you want to ask any questions, this is what we're here for. Let's start. Cressida and Andrew, over to you.
Well, hello. Great to see you. Cressida and myself are delighted to be with you today to discuss and engage on essential coaching techniques to be a more effective leader. Thank you for that introduction, Gwen. And Lois, if you go to the next slide, that'd be great. Okay, so my first question to you is this: are you growing or are you dying? It can only be one or the other. A plateau never truly exists. It's either a gradual incline, a gradual decline, a rise or a fall, or as in this picture, green growth in the middle, surrounded by that desert decay. I mean, hopefully there's no debate that we should all be wanting to continuously learn and grow, but I ask you this because we don't often reflect on if we are actually growing. So I'm going to ask you the question right now. Are you currently growing your skills? Yes or no? Think about that. And what type of growth are you having if you are growing? Maybe write that down, get a pen and paper out. What type of growth do you think you're having? And I ask it because in my experience, you can see how we measure or describe our growth by the achievements people put down on their CVs. And they generally say things like, I saved X dollars, I implemented Y systems, I delivered Y benefits with my team. That's great. But the most powerful skills we need to grow, those that develop us and those around us, and they're not easy to gain. And this slide, if Lewis can go to the next one, sums up for me why that is the case. So it's a little cartoon, and you can see yourself sort of trying to pull rocks with square wheels and just not willing to take on board to think about better ways of working it. And you can argue this slide would be very different if it was prehistoric women rather than men. But in reality, we all are just so busy with work deadlines, the annual rhythm of appraisals, rankings, bonuses. You're just not really working hard enough on yourself. You're pulling those rocks to move the business forward, and that's great. But you're not really thinking about taking on board a balanced development for yourself and your own others around you. And it's not that the skills you gained when delivering these rocks, if you want to call it here, for your company aren't valuable. They are, but they're focused on today's problems and not specifically developing your personal leadership or strategic skills. And you can actually go through a whole career with this approach. In fact, many people I talk to say, oh, I've been in banking 15 years, I've been banking 20 years, I've been banking 25 years, as though the 20 years matters. But in many ways, after the first 5 years in banking, for many people, the next 10, 15, 20 years are just rinse and repeat of the fifth one. So I contend that it's developing you and your journey type of performance leadership that will allow you to get the best out of your team. So how do you do that? How do you accelerate your journey and those around you to high performance leadership? Well, that brings us on to the benefits of coaching and the delivery of some coaching essentials for you to practically take away as leaders today. So I'd like to go to the next slide, if I can, Lois, that'd be great. And I'd like to start by saying for me, the only failure in this whole presentation is any failure by you to participate. I want you to give 100% to the session because that's where you're going to get 100% back, simple. But let's just imagine for a second, you get the chat box up, make sure you can use it. What happens if you gave 70% today? How much would you get back? Let's use the chat box. As I say, it's not a trick question. If you participate 70% today, how much do you think you get back? Even 60%, what would you think about? Let's see that chat box open up. Let's see get used to using some interactive stuff today. Let's see if anyone's going to put it down. If you participate 7% today, how much are you going to get back? Not a trick question. And this is the key thing. Ah, thank you. One person kicked off. Thank you, Lisa. In they pop. 35%, 50%. Yes, 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 is one of the answers. 20%. All these answers are absolutely on the money. And in fact, we did another session yesterday. I've got to say, this is quality answers straight from the beginning. It's basically less than 70%. If you put in 70%, you're not going to get 70% back. You're going to get less than that at best. And if you put in 100%, what are you going to get? Yeah, you're going to get 100%. It's that old analogy. When you try and boil a kettle, you've still got hot water at 99%. It's only when you get to 100 that you get the steam that makes it all happen. So you want to get that going. Fantastic. So the question, obviously, I'm going to ask you now, and again, using the chat box or the emotions, the reactions buttons, is, are Chris and myself going to get 100% out of you today? Raise your hand. As you can, get the reaction button. I'm going to look across to see it's going. Yes, thank you, Gwen. Boom, straight up with a high five. I want to see more of those come across. Yes, thank you. That's great. Yeah, brilliant. Fantastic. Participation level high. It's going to be a great session. We next want to move on and get some context of you as a group. We don't know you all. I'd like you to pull up a web page. And get that Menti code going. You can see it on the screen. It's going to be in the chat box as well. If you can, let's get the QR code going on your phone. Doesn't take long. Lots of you have Menti before. Or just pull up a separate web page. Use those codes there. It's okay if you can't put it up. And we had a couple of people yesterday on the trading floor. Clearly, they didn't have any device. That's okay. You can either put it in the chat box if you want to, or just watch the results. What we'll see is the general trend from answering these three questions. So if you've given enough intro, you've had enough opportunity to get Menti going. So I'm going to ask you three questions now. Remember it, we were looking for 100% participation. So let's go to the first question on Menti. And the first question is this. How familiar are you with the concept of coaching to improve team performance? How familiar are you with the concept of coaching to improve team performance? So I'm hoping to see that slide come across. There it is. Brilliant. There's the numbers coming. Live feedback on the first question. Look at that. Somewhat familiar, 50%. Not familiar, 7%. So 60%, not that familiar. 30% familiar enough. And 10% very familiar. 9% coming up. Obviously, the numbers changing there. So really interesting to see that. And that's really good feedback. I'm going to take some of that, those numbers down right here now for myself. Okay, brilliant. And you can see here, 32 people so far on Menti. I think we should be able to have more than that. Please keep going. And difficult to see exactly how many people on the call today, but I'm pretty sure more than 33. But maybe you can't all access Menti, but it gives you the flavor of where we're at. So let's take the second question, which is how often, for those that do know, which is obviously a small percentage, it's about 35%. How often do you use coaching when leading your team members? It's either I don't use coaching at all, I sometimes use coaching, I often use coaching, or I use coaching all of the time as part of your technique. Love to see some answers for this. Okay, numbers coming up. So some people are obviously familiar with it, but obviously don't use it. So that's pretty clear. Oh, it's changing as we go. Numbers rising there. Fantastic. Brilliant. Okay, I think that's set. Really interesting to see that sort of almost it's obviously a skew as it was last time, probably 60-40 or so on how often using coaching. And the last one is an interesting question. Have you actually ever been formally coached yourself? That's the last question. Have you ever been formally coached yourself? And let's find out what your experiences are. Never before. There we go. 40%, rising to 40%. Formal coaching, only 15%. It's really interesting to see those answers there and that coaching awareness. And that's just very helpful because it'll maybe change some things we talk. Look at that. Bam, ever been coaching for 45. It's a huge percentage in that boat in terms of not having any real exposure. So, good news. A few of you that do have been coached will know it's just not an easy skill. It's so much easier to tell someone than coach someone. It really is. And of course, that's what many of us do all day long as line managers and direct reports. But the reality is, in the era we're in now, we have to trust and inspire our teams, not command and control them. We can't do the command and control thing. Trust and inspiring is what we want to do. And there's lots of reasons why. For a start, you can't possibly know everything. And as leaders, the challenge is to develop and unleash the inherent talent in your people through the coaching methods. And if we go to the next slide, please, Lewis. This guy here called Jim Rohn, maybe you wouldn't have heard him so much in America, he's super famous in the US. He's one of America's best ever business philosophers. And he said these great words. He said, never wish your life were easier, wish with you were better. And then secondly, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. And this is a quote from one of his best books. I've got it here. Yep, there we go. It's Seven Strategies for Wealth and Happiness. It's a short book. It's totally recommendable. It's one you could easily read every year before you start the year. It's just fantastic. And if you take in his statements, especially this last one, work harder on yourself than you do on your job, then it's life-changing in terms of what that says. And it leads us to your second tip of the day. And that is, if you want to become a good coach, get an external coach yourself. In fact, you have to if you want to be authentic and if you want to become a better coach. Personally, myself, I have coaches. We're coaches. And the thing is, it's an important rhythm to get into. Why, especially in banking, is it important to adopt coaching leadership? Well, because banking was actually one of the leading industries in performance coaching. It's actually where a lot of the performance coaching originally started. But it's now running significantly behind other industries, particularly tech companies. And that's where graduates prefer to go. And why do they prefer to go that? Well, why is banking falling behind? Well, mainly banking is falling behind because it's become seen as a short-term cure for those that are struggling. It's almost the only use case you're seeing there. Very few companies are being proactive, as other industries are. And they're not giving it to those who are high performing and want to go higher. And they're certainly not part of a leader's standard toolkit. And you can see that in the numbers, right? It's clearly not part of your standard, many of you's standard toolkit today. There are exceptions, and I'm really pleased to do a little bit of research. Goldman CEO has a coach, happened publicly to say that. And I understand those from Standard Chartered on the call. You're developing a program called Leaning In, which is great. I really look forward to seeing the results of that as it rolls through. But to help you today, if we go to the next slide, please, we're going to help you cover three main areas. Cresta is going to take you through the first two, and I'm going to do the third. The first two are basically putting coaching in context, and then Chris is going to really give you a very useful coaching model on how you can help deliver coaching, giving that introduction to it. And then I'm going to finish off by talking about change and how coaching works within a change environment, something all of you are heavily under. So you might have said, well, where are the coaching tips? Well, they're going to be delivered on the way, and you've had two already, but I'm going to continue with another couple of quick ones in a row. So Lewis, if you could go to the next slide and then disconnect the PowerPoint for a second. I'm just going to go and switch over to the camera here and go to the board, because you know, I need to talk to you a little bit about learning. And when you're learning, you need to be in the right mindset. You know, you've got to have the right thoughts. But there are a few things out there that can kill learning, and one of them is a really deadly phrase. And I'm going to say it to you, and you're going to think, well, what's deadly about it? But just put it down there. The biggest phrase you can have that will stop you learning is this phrase here. Oh, I changed colours. It's this phrase. I know. When you say that phrase, just you're all on mute, so you can say it yourself. When you say, I know, you can physically feel the barriers coming up, your brain coming down, and not wanting to take on any new information. You don't want any new viewpoints when you say, I know that. People often say, I know, and they're too quick to dismiss, and it closes down the brain. And you might find yourself saying that, but you might find the person, the coachee, saying that. And so what we do is we say, let's adopt a different phrase. So if you ever hear that phrase, say to yourself, don't say that, say something different, say this. That's interesting. It's a much better phrase. Think about it. When you say, that's interesting, and again, you're on mute, say it to yourselves out loud, just have that experience. That's interesting. Your mind opens up, your arms even, your palms come out, your brain opens up, and you're willing to take on new viewpoints. And that's where you want to be. And I want you to be there. So Lewis, if you can switch back slides here, that's tip number three. Make sure that you get people into a mode where they want to and will take attention. Okay, so next, a fourth tip for you is during the session, if we move, go to the next slide, please, Lewis. There was the at no slide. During the session, you should expect things called BFOs, blinding flashes of the obvious. Lewis, if you can run through the animation, that'd be great. And you might have some of these already. They're just light bulb moments, and they will be points that will directly resonate with you. The more the better. Hopefully you've got some already. And when you do it, I want to note them down in paper, in pen. Because when we finish, what I'm asking you to do is copy them into the chat bot so we can see them at the end. And why would I do that? Well, tip number four. If the coach reflects and writes it down, not only will it cement it into their brain, but by sharing it with others, everyone will have the opportunity for a second chance of applying in their lives. And for me, that's the thrill of coaching, seeing people change for the better. So get ready to write down your BFOs, and it's a perfect time now for me to hand over to Cresta to cover putting coaching into context and providing you with a coaching model to work from. Cresta, to you.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. So you've already had four tips there. So it's jam-packed full of information. So as Andrew said, I'm going to talk through putting coaching into context, give you a little bit of a potted history about coaching. I'm going to talk you through why coaching is so useful to you as a leader. And then we'll go through the five essential techniques. So the model, it's a great model by a phenomenal woman called Julie Starr. And I'll talk you through that, and then we'll hand over back to Andrew for change. So Lois, if you could go to the next slide, please. So bit of a brief background to coaching. So don't worry too much about the pictures that you're seeing immediately. So some will tell you that coaching isn't just a process. It's not just a practice. Coaching is a way of life. And what do I mean by that? I mean that actually the coaching is very much around self-examination. It's about examining ourselves, wanting to develop. As Andrew said, it's about growing, not dying. And actually, some would argue, some coaching historians and academics will argue that coaching has been around since the dawn of time. And in fact, coaching came about through Socrates, the Greek philosopher, which would mean that coaching dates back to about 470 BC. And why do they say that? Well, they say that because Socrates was very much about self-examination. And in fact, he said, a life without examination is not a life worth living. So he lived and breathed this, and he also encouraged it and others. And he was also very famous for asking lots of why questions, one very powerful tool in coaching. So we know that coaching disciplines and coaching styles have been around since the sort of, you know, since the dawn of time, but coaching as we know it now probably started in about the 1970s, and it started in sports coaching. So actually, if you look at this diagram, if you see the person on the right hand side, so the gentleman on the right hand side is a chap called Timothy Galway. So Timothy Galway wrote a book in 1974 called The Inner Game of Tennis, or The Inner Game, it's shortened to and generally known by. And actually, it was a seminal work of his time. So what Timothy Galway taught in this book was that actually, if you're playing tennis, the opponent is not the person over the net. The person is actually what's going on for you in here. So his coaching was very much about working with sports professionals and amateurs alike and helping them increase their self-confidence, reduce their anxiety, reduce their self-doubt and thinking that they couldn't hit the ball correctly, and increasing their focus and concentration. And actually, he saw incredible results with individuals just by getting them to focus on themselves as opposed to tactics to beat their opponent on the other side of the net. And the inner game of tennis has moved into the business world very, very successfully, and is used quite widely in business coaching. So we start with Tim Galway in about the 1970s. If you then look to the left and see the gentleman on the left. So this is a chap called Thomas Leonard. So in 1995, Thomas Leonard formed and founded the ICF, the International Coaching Federation. Now, for those of you who are a little bit more familiar with coaching, you might know, okay, I know the ICF. So the ICF is probably the best thing we have in coaching to a regulator. They're a governing body, they accredit and they kite mark coaching. So in the 90s, we started to see frameworks, we started to see governance, we started to see oversight, and we started to see an increase in models, in coaching schools, coach training, and also coaching books. And I made a joke yesterday that both Andrew and I are perpetual students. We are actual students, but perpetual students of coaching. And one of the things I think we've both been overwhelmed with is the sheer number of books that you're asked to read when you're learning about coaching. And there are many, many, many books, and we will recommend some for you later on. And actually, one of my favorite books was written by the lady in the middle, and this is a woman called Laura Whitworth, and she wrote a book called Coactive Coaching. So she was one of the first thinkers around coaching being a collaborative sport, being very much a partnership between coach and coachee. And now fast forward to where we are now, as Andrew said, coaching is starting to have a real resurgence during this time of change, because it's such an incredible skill and an incredible thing to do in times of change. And I don't want to take his thunder, he'll talk about that later on. So that's a brief guide. Lois, next slide, please. So what I want to do is just give you a flavor for coaching techniques and the difference between what we call directive and non-directive. So as Andrew said, you're all, you know, leaders, you may have teams underneath you, you certainly guide and advise people, even if you don't have teams. So you're going to spend a lot of your time in the bottom left-hand corner of this sort of slightly topsy-turvy oval. So you're in the directive mode. You will instruct, you'll tell people what to do. That's part of your role. You'll give advice, you'll offer guidance, you'll give feedback, you'll make suggestions. So you're spending most of your time in that very much push-style, directive style. That's not what coaching is. Coaching is the top right. So coaching is about asking questions that raise awareness for the coachee. It's about summarizing, paraphrasing, reflecting. It's about listening to understand yourself, and to help the other person understand as well. So this is what we call non-directive. So actually, if you start to coach, the reality is you are doubling the skills that you have, because you're now covering everything from directive style all the way through to non-directive style. The other advantage of actually using coaching is if you use a more directive approach, the reality is you're using a push style, which it says you're solving someone's problem for them. If you use a coaching style, you're helping someone else solve their problem for themselves. So it's like the old adage, actually, if you give someone a fish, they eat for a day. If you teach them how to fish, they eat for life. So that's why it's useful. One more thing before I move on to the model is you do have to know your intent. So coaching is not about influence or coercion or directing. It's not about you coaching someone because you want them to get to a certain point. Coaching is about the coachee. When you go into a coaching relationship, when you coach someone, it's a selfless relationship. And actually, you're doing it because actually you want that person to develop and to grow, not actually to do something that you want them to do. So you have to be very mindful of your intent. Next slide, please, Lois. So I'm now going to introduce you to, as I said, a wonderful lady called Julie Starr, wrote the coaching manual. So I can do the holding up of the book as well. I didn't get this right yesterday. I didn't have my book. I felt outmanned by Andrew there. And again, we'll show you later on, but I would highly recommend it as a book. We don't get royalties for advocating these books, by the way, alas. So Julie Starr talks about five skills that one needs when actually you want to be a decent coach. And these five skills are as follows: rapport, active listening, intuition, asking effective questions, and giving constructive feedback. So I'm going to go through these in brief so you get some ideas and you get some tips and techniques. Next slide, please, Lois. So rapport. So rapport is generally defined as having a close and harmonious relationship between two people. There's mutual understanding, there's mutual appreciation, there's mutual respect, and there's really good effective communication of shared ideas. You know, there's harmony, there's kinship, it might be a comfortable relationship. A high rapport relationship will also have really great chemistry as well. So that's what rapport really is. So how do you build rapport, which is really important when you're in a coaching relationship? So two things to think about. So one is observe. So if you are sitting in front of somebody that you want to coach and who wants to be coached, start to just observe how they operate. I'm a massive advocate for just observing individuals in life, people watch. So think about two things. What's the language that they use? So what words do they use? Get really specific about what words are they using, but also how are they using those words? What's their tone? What's their pitch? What's their volume? What's their speed? And also, where's the emphasis? Where are they placing the emphasis on the words in the sentence? So firstly, observe the language that they use and how they use it. Secondly, observe their body language. Now, I appreciate it's a slightly more difficult thing to do when we're in a virtual world, but it's not impossible. So what's their facial expressions? Are they making eye contact with you, or are they looking away? And if they're looking away, where are they looking away? And when does that happen? Look at their body language. You know, are they leaning forward? Are they leaning back? Are they open? Are they closed? Now, one of the dangers of sort of rapport building is that we misconstrue other people's language and other people's body language. So that's why observing someone over a period of time will really help you understand them and how they operate. But once you get to know that, what you can start to do is something we call mirror and match. And some of you might be quite familiar with this. So start to match the language that they use. Use the exact words that they use. And the reason why that's important is because if you're using the words that they use, firstly, you both have a similar understanding. You're talking on the same lines. Secondly, they feel heard. You know, if you play back to them what they said, they feel like you've truly listened to them. And actually, if you're using coaching techniques, it's incredibly useful to play something back to someone in their language. Because sometimes what you find is they say, oh, did I really say that? Okay, that's not necessarily what I meant. So start to match the words that they use, and also, you know, match the style. If they're high energy and actually you're looking to get resolution on something and you're looking to problem solve, match their energy levels. You know, it would be really quite effective. And again, match their body language, the second thing. Now, you do have to be a bit careful. I always caveat this with how you do this, because sometimes it can be very awkward if you're exactly mirroring someone on their body language. I've been matched and mirrored. I know Andrew has, and it can feel a little bit clunky. So do it in a way that feels authentic. Don't try too hard. And it will become much more natural to you. So that is rapport. Second slide, please, Lois. So the next thing I'm going to talk to you about is active listening. Now, if you are interested, there are so many books on listening styles. Stephen Covey has 5 styles of listening. I've chosen Julie's because actually they're a little simpler. So Julie has 4 styles of listening. So firstly, there's cosmetic listening. So cosmetic listening is very much around, I might look like I'm listening, but really I'm not. So there will be some of you on this call, particularly those of you who turn your videos off, and actually you'll be pretending to listen, but actually you might be distracted with an email that's come in from your boss and there's a fire drill, or you might be thinking about what's happening in your meeting that's happening in an hour or so's time. So cosmetic listening, unfortunately, is, you know, something that happens on a day-to-day basis, but it does not take any place in coaching. It can be very, very, very unhelpful. So firstly, cosmetic listening, which is I might look like I'm listening, but in actual fact, I'm not. The second level of listening is conversational listening, which is where we spend most of our time, particularly in a one-on-one situation. So I'm engaged in talking with you. I'm listening to what you're saying. I'm thinking, I'm processing and what you're saying. I'm repeating back. I'm talking back. I'm giving you my answers. That's that, you know, daily exchange of dialogue. That's where we spend most of our time. And that's fine, but again, not the right style of listening for a coaching conversation. And that's the next level. So that is active listening. And that is typified by, I'm very focused on you. I'm really listening and paying attention to what you're saying. I might be recording something that you're saying. I'm barely speaking. I might be asking questions. I might be looking to get clarity. I might be, you know, playing something back to you. But actually, the attention and my focus is on you, and I'm really paying attention. That's active listening. And then the last one is what we call deep listening, which, you know, is probably not something you need to get to in an ordinary coaching conversation. That's really very much around, I barely say anything. It's totally selfless. I'm completely in the zone, and it's all about you. But active listening is really what you want, where you want to get to. So how? How do you get to active listening? So a couple of things to think about. First of all, as I said earlier, part of being a great coach is just being aware, observing others, but also observing yourself. So one of my questions to you is, when have you been cosmetic listening today? So take some time out throughout the day and think, when have I been in a one-on-one situation where I know I wasn't listening, where I know I got distracted by something? What happened? Why? Why did you get distracted? Why was it cosmetic listening? You know, what was it that was happening for you? Did the other person notice? So firstly, start to raise your awareness of when you're cosmetic listening and actually zone back in again. Because it will start to reduce the amount of time, but particularly if you're paying attention to yourself. Secondly, think about when you've been conversational listening. The problem with conversational listening is we're often trying to solve something whilst we're talking. So think, when you've been in a conversation with somebody, have you been trying to solve their problems in your mind? Have you been sitting there assessing what it is that they're doing wrong? Were you in a conversation where they told you something and you thought secretly, actually, you know, I wouldn't have done it that way. I would have done it so much better. Are you giving advice? Are you trying to compete? Are you trying to figure out what it is they're going to say next? So again, pay attention to that voice in your head, to that mental chatter. Because actually that's the thing that will stop you from active listening. The other thing I would also recommend is reduce the distractions. Get in an environment where actually there are no distractions so that you can really pay attention. And if you find yourself in that situation where your mind's going, the mental chatter is kicking in and you know suddenly you're not concentrating, stop, take a breath. And then remember, this is not about me, this is about them. So that's active listening. The next one is intuition. Now, I can't teach you intuition, but just bear in mind, when it comes to intuition, you all have it. You all have intuition. And Julie Starr talks very much around intuition is a very powerful tool when you're coaching. So, you know, it might be, it's also known as having a hunch. It's also known as gut instinct. I'm trusting my gut instinct. So start to trust your gut instinct a little bit more. If you're having a conversation with somebody and actually something's telling you, they're not telling you something, something's not quite right, you know, maybe you're just picking up something, follow your gut. And if you're not sure how to raise it, then simply say, look, you know, I'm just throwing something out there. My gut's telling me such and such, or I'm noticing and observing such and such. What do you think? Does that resonate with you? The worst that can happen is they'll say, no, actually it doesn't. And you'll be like, okay, fine. But most of the time, if you trust your gut and follow your gut, what they will normally do is say, you know what, you're spot on. Or they might say, actually, no, it's not that, but now you've mentioned it, actually the following things occur to me. So trust your gut instinct is the next skill. And then we have two more. The next one, next slide please, Lois, is asking effective questions. Now, we don't have enough time to talk about effective questions, but they're very very simply typified by being simple, having a purpose, being non-judgmental, and not being controlling or coercive. So that's an effective question, but what I want to concentrate on is open versus closed questions. And open questions are a coach's, they should be in your toolkit. They're incredibly powerful. So what is an open question? So an open question invariably starts with a W. So any question starting with the following six words: what, why, where, who, when, and which. So those six W's, and also how. So seven words in total. So I'll play those back again: what, why, where, who, when, which, and how. These are open-ended questions. Why are they so important? Because they encourage dialogue. They're not closed like a can or a do, which is invariably followed by a yes or no. They encourage dialogue. They allow the person to speak. So if you can ask a open-ended question and then allow the silence to play out, you'll get so much more back from the individual. So that is asking effective questions. And then the last thing to think about before I hand back to Andrew is constructive feedback. So giving constructive feedback. Now, you are all, I'm sure, in a position where you have to give feedback to your teams, your peers, and it's something, you know, we do a lot in banking. So here's some tips to remember when you're giving constructive feedback, and this is a more coaching approach. So always give feedback with positive intent. What's your intent? Too often feedback is negative or it can be critical. And just to be clear, even if you put negative feedback in between two lots of positive feedback, what we used to call a feedback sandwich, it's still negative feedback. So just make sure that you're going in with positive intent. So think about, is my feedback based on fact? Is my feedback based on behavior that I observe in the other person? It shouldn't be based on loose observation, and it certainly shouldn't be based on your opinion or others' opinion. Is my feedback constructive and beneficial? Will the individual really learn and grow as an outcome of my feedback? Would my feedback damage their self-esteem or their self-confidence in a way that would be really detrimental to them? And then lastly, is my feedback specific and not generalized? And is it specific to them as an individual? So that's Julie Starr's five effective tips. So now I'm going to hand back to Andrew to talk about change.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. Okay, so This is good. We're going to talk about change. Are you ready for change? Are you prepared for change? In the chat box, I love using the chat box a bit. Let me know the magnitude of your change agenda in 2022. High or low? So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high, 1 being low, put your number in. What is the scale of your change agenda for you personally this year? 1 to 10. Let's see this come rolling in there. So, 10, thank you. 4, oh, that's interesting. 8. Let's see the switch. 10, 10. Oh, 7, 8, 9, 8, 8, 8. It's very popular. Not too much for some people. Maybe 8's definitely the average is coming through. I'm surprised. 8, 8, 8. Wow, is there some auto repeat here? Fantastic. 9, 9. Okay, that's actually quite good. I was actually expecting some definite tens. We obviously had a few there, or even a cheeky 11. And I say that really because change is definitely part of our lives. And a friend of mine who knows, thanks for these answers, these are great, by the way. A friend of mine knows a boxer called Barry McGuigan. I don't know if you know Barry McGuigan. He's a super famous boxer in the 80s, late 80s. He was Olympic medalist of the UK. And this friend of mine said to Barry, he said, Barry, do you enjoy boxing? And Barry said, yes, I enjoy boxing. The money's great, the fame is great. I'm afraid I can't do the Irish action. But then my friend said to him, Barry, do you enjoy being punched in the face? And Barry said, no, but if you don't want the opportunity for the money, you have to be able to take the punches or just don't bother getting in the ring at all. So welcome to banking. Change is just part of the regular diet. It's something that happens to all of us. And if we don't want large scale change, you should get out the ring and change industries. But assuming you're going to stay, you've been in the industry for a while, you will find yourself leading change, guaranteed. And I, like many of you, you know, I was an ex-global COO, global head of ops. You know, I've led, sponsored, and delivered change programs in the tens and hundreds of millions. And if you haven't done this yet, I hope you actually get the chance. But if you do, you do have to be able to roll with the punches. And this means you need to change, and the people around you need to change. So why don't you or your people change when you need them to? Why is success just so hard and elusive? My experience is linked to one thing, one word. It's fear. It's some type of fear. It's fear of failure. It's fear of not having the financial commitment for the organization. It's fear of not getting the resources signed off, servers made available. It's fear the solution might not work. It's fear the project can't be done on top of everything else you're asking me to do. It's the fear of impact on jobs and their teams. And it's that fear that creates resistance to change. And your job as a coach is to overcome that resistance. And how do you coach people to do that? Well, I'm going to show you a formula now that will dramatically help your approach to change and the coaching sessions. Lewis, if you can hit the first animation. This is the formula. Oh, that's gone back too many, I think. Anyway, that's fine. We can stay with that. So the first formula there, and the formula says D times V plus F times by S has to be greater than resistance. Now, the R is resistance. That was easy to give away. Just wonder if anyone can guess what any of the other letters mean to the left-hand side of the equation. Put them in the chat box. See if anyone can come up with anything. Don't be shy. See if you can come up. What could break down the resistance where someone's afraid or worried about something? What could you do as a coach? What could inspire them to help them get through? Let's see if we can get any letters out there at all. Doubt, disruption, all good answers keep coming. But how could we go to the left-hand side of the question, the positive things, what we do to do that? Fear, definitely fear. Diversity, assurance. This is good thinking coming in here. I like it. Drive, like that one. That's great. From Maria, thank you. Direction, value, nice. Listen, I'm going to, resistance. Yeah, that was the R on the far right. So yes, thank you for that, Sarah. That's good. So let me take you through what it is. This is the model that will dramatically help you. And the formula, by the way, works whether you're getting, when you want to get fit, dieting or breaking a habit, it works for everyone. But let me go through the letters. So Lewis, if you can go through them, next animation. It's dissatisfaction is the D, times by vision. If you add next animation as well, please. If you add in the first steps, then all of those and support, all those need to be greater than resistance. Now, why do I say that? Well, we talk about vision all the time. People need to be inspired by that. We talk about dissatisfaction. People need to be dissatisfied with their current state. You're not going to break resistance down unless someone wants to get over that hurdle. Think about, I said, obvious things, getting fit, dieting, breaking habits. You've got to have a level of dissatisfaction. You've got to have a vision for where you go in the future. You need to understand what those first steps are. I'm going to come on to support in a second. And they need to be greater than the resistance. So in this example I'm going to give you, we're going to pretend you've got a line manager in front of you and their resistance to change is 60%. So you've got 60% on the right-hand side of the equation and we've got to get over that. The good news is, we're going to pretend this is a new systems transformation program, is that the line manager on day one is really unhappy with the status quo. So their dissatisfaction is very high. And let's give a 10 out of 10, right? 10 of dissatisfaction. The sponsor has done a terrific job in selling the program. So the line manager is excited about the vision of the transformation. So that's going to be an 8 out of 10. Doesn't always happen. Don't always get great sponsors. But in this case, they did. They had a program manager explain the program. And they've seen change before. So this line manager understands what the first steps are. And they give that score an 8 out of 10. Now, it doesn't take much to pull this together, but I'm going to do it for you in the maths. So we have a total starting score of 10 for dissatisfaction. They're not happy with where they are today. They've got 8 for vision. Times that together and you get 80. You're then going to add on 8 for the score of first steps, and that's 88%. And if you stop there without the S, 88% is greater than the resistance, 66%, 60%, and therefore, good news, the case for change is great, and the project continues. And many projects start on that basis. People are hyped up at the beginning. However, on day two, you add in this new part to the formula of change, which you can see down here is the S. And S is the level of support people receive. If that support is low, say 30%, Let's give examples. The sponsor disappears. The PM program turns political. They've got no coaching support. That 80% we just talked about, 88% we talked about, would be multiplied by 30%. And then the total becomes 24. So the resistance to change is higher. The will to change diminishes, and the program gradually slides off track. I'm not making this stuff up, right? In my experience, and you'll have seen countless times, benefit targets are locked in on projects. You're on your own in as a line manager. So the importance of coaching is vital. It doesn't take long to work this out when you look at this equation, that the easiest way to impact the outcome of this, to break that resistance, is actually all about coaching. How do you help people talk about their dissatisfaction? How do you help people with their vision of where they want to go to? How do you help people understand what the first steps could be? How do you help coach people and give them the right support on that journey? And a successful coach, using skills Chris has outlined and many others, will ensure that the line manager is not just able to make this project successful by coaching, but if you've coached successfully, as Chris has said, you teach a person to fish, not just give them a fish. You will have equipped the line manager to develop transferable skills for all projects going forward by lowering their resistance to change. This formula is super powerful. And if you think about it and you have a conversation, you can see as people talk, areas they're talking to, and areas where you need to help pick up to help them in their journey. So let's have a little summary of some top tips so far. Thank you very much. Get a coach yourself. First tip, it's a relationship thing. So choose your coach wisely, but just give it a go for you and your team. I've got a few slots available. I know Chris does as well. Gwen will talk about that later. But if not, just choose someone who's qualified. Please don't just go down the phone a friend route and pretend it's coaching. Second, gain commitment. Ask for 100% commitment. Get permission to coach. Think about saying it's interesting. Don't say I know. That's a deadly thing. BFOs, write them down. I'm really hoping that you're going to put in some BFOs straight away now. Just put some in, get ready to write them down and put some in the chat box. Think about that history of coaching. And I just think the 5-point coaching model is so helpful. Active listening, whiffle, mirror and match, just a few things. Feedback, really important areas to talk about. And then the formula for change, D times V plus F plus S greater than R. First time we've seen the equation, but I promise you, when you think about it and get into it, you'll see how valuable it is. So let's just add in some of those blinding flashes of the obvious that you've thought about today. What's sort of stuck with you in the few sessions, sort of 40 minutes we've had so far? Anything stuck with you? Can be brave enough to put that down. One of you guys, I don't know, you've already put in Amy, Jean, Brona, Mara, Hannah, Aoife. Go on and put them in. Use open questions. Excellent. Yeah, that's actually time support. You're correct, Dominique. So you take that whole question and you times it by support. That's absolutely right. So that equation is wrong there. It should be T times V plus F times S is correct. Use open questions. Listen. Absolutely, that active listening, getting to active listening state. That was a great section by Cresta. Don't do cosmetic. Anything else that people have gathered so far in the presentation? Active listening, avoid the rush into, brilliant, excellent. Tips to increase support, very much so. So support very much can be increased, Robert, by essentially the coaching method. So engaging with someone, not just as a direct line manager, but saying to them, can we have a conversation about coaching you into that place? It's not about saying, don't worry, I'll get this signed off, I'll get that signed off. That's giving them a fish. That's just taking away the problems. This is about teaching them how to coach them, is this actually coaching them into a better way through that change formula. Positive intent, Julie, well, I'm trying to think about that. Do definitely have positive intent. You're sort of starting to get the point. If we go to the next animation, this is key. Jim Rohn says it, work harder on yourself than your job, but at least, work harder on yourself than you do on job. And for me, I was just thinking about a couple of things. At least get a book. And if you don't like books, and less and less people seem to like books actually, or go coaching, but they like audibles. People are happy, people drive a lot, walk a lot, in the gym a lot, they're happy to listen to one. So get it on Audible. That's a great tip. You get through a lot more books that way. Get a coach, another great thing. But if you flip to the next slide, I thought, Chris and myself thought we'd put a few books in there, and you can see here, first one, 7 Strategies for Wealth and Happiness by Jim Rohn. I think that's an annual read, every sort of beginning of new year for you. would be great. The middle book, Coaching Performance, not by Laura Whitmore, by Sir John Whitmore, an absolute classic. It's banking focused, really a fantastic manual, and pretty, you know, one of the sort of top tens in the starting lineup if you want to get into coaching more detail. And then the Coaching Manual, as Chris said, an easier, more accessible in some ways book. Great one to go from Julie, and then you can get further deeper into the subjects that Cresta was teaching you on. I'm going to be a bit courageous now, given I've sort of had some feedback here on the chat, but not as much chat response as I want, but I'm going to go back to Menti and just see how you feel about coaching. So ask one question this time, same Menti, if you've got it up there, you can just use it again. If not, bang it in there using the QR code. And we're going to ask you same question again and see if answers are changing. So how familiar do you now feel with the coachette, the concept of coaching to improve team performance? Let's have that up there. How familiar do you feel? So remember the answers from last time. Fantastic. No one's not familiar. That's the big change. That's what I was looking for. Could have been embarrassing otherwise. And look at that. Numbers rising nicely. So we had 60-40. We're now 45-55. No, better than that, the other way. So that feels positive. I'm really pleased that you're getting a sense of what coaching is. You can tell, Chris and myself are super excited about this subject. It really makes a difference. And we're not just saying that because we're into the subject. There's all the evidence behind it. There's waves and waves of evidence behind this. And it just makes sense, doesn't it? It really does just make sense. So I want to finish before I go back to Gwen with just finishing off on this question I started with about growing. Are you growing or are you dying? And Lewis, if you can pop to the next slide, that'd be great. I want to ask, has anyone been here before? Given the fact we're sort of Asia time zone, probably not that many people. You might not know it. Does anyone know where it is in the chat box? Anyone recognize that picture? Be amazing if, well, nah, if I say it, it makes sense. Maybe you don't know. But it's, yeah, well played, Maggie. Bang on the money, Death Valley. And nothing grows here in Death Valley, right? You're barely lucky to get half an inch or a couple of centimeters of rain in a year. Temperatures reach an incredible 130 degrees, world record 54 Fahrenheit. I mean, it's just temperatures that you can hardly conceive. It's basically death. It's no growth at all. But that's what we thought. And in winter 2004, something amazing happened. They got 6 inches of rain. I mean, it's never been seen before in the history of winter 2004. And something amazing happened. And if you go to the next slide, Lewis, you'll see what happened. Death Valley, this is it. Flowers, yes, flowers appeared. They're beautiful. And it's a wonderful metaphor for coaching. You know, the seeds are always in there in your coachee. And with the right coaching, they can actually bloom. And that's why you should take on coaching in your leadership style. Thank you. Back to you, Gwen.
Great metaphor. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Cressida and Andrew. I hope this audience has actually benefited from hearing from our coaches. It's ever so important. I have a coach myself, and I always think it's a good idea for you and obviously for your team moving forward. There are many coaches that you obviously probably have come across. It's really down to chemistry as well. So ensure that whoever you wish to be coached by and working with is obviously has a good rapport with you, and you'll get tons back. So what I'll do is I'll send you Andrew and Cressida's email addresses. I'll also send you the books that they've been flashing at us, and this is also recorded, so I'll send the recording as well, so you have that as reference for future for yourself, and maybe pass it on to your team too. So this is it. We're now at the hour. I'll leave you all to go back to your meetings or to obviously finish the day. The next meetings are for women in the CEO community is in May, and it's around the do's and don'ts of inclusive leadership. We'll start with APAC, and then we're going to go across to North America. So that shall be interesting to hear what inclusivity means for these territories. By all means, do ask any questions, send any feedback. There's CEO magazine there as well, if you want to have a good read at the RTO policies in Americas and EMEA, particularly. That's what's in the magazine that we've issued last month. So we'll see you soon. Thank you very much for coming. Goodbye.